This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Welcome back to The Checkup, our weekly series about how healthcare is changing in Maryland. This is our final segment in the series. For 7 months, we've dug into the details of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. How have specific groups of people been affected by it? Who has and has not been able to get access to insurance through it? How have different components of the healthcare system responded to the changes? Today, we're going to take a step back and ask the question, how does the Affordable Care Act fit into the big picture of Maryland's healthcare system? And with me to bat that around is the state's Health Secretary, Joshua Sharfstein. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
Also joining us in the studio is Colleen Berry. She's an associate professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here.
And with us by phone is Peter Bielenson. He's CEO of Evergreen Health Co-op, one of the insurers on Maryland's exchange. Welcome back, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Secretary Sharfstein, the first open enrollment period for health insurance ended at midnight 2 weeks ago, March 31st. As of last Friday, about 65,000 Marylanders have signed up for private insurance on Maryland's exchange, almost four times that many, about 248,000, have gotten coverage through Medicaid. So is the Affordable Care Act working the way it's supposed to if it's enrolling so many more people in Medicaid, the government insurance, than through private insurers?
Well, the Affordable Care Act's having an incredibly important and, I think, positive impact right now in Maryland. And I think you can see that not just in the enrollment numbers, but in the way healthcare itself is changing, in the changes that are happening for seniors who can age in place at home instead of going into nursing homes, for kids who can stay on their parents' private coverage through their employers. There's so many things that have been happening that are positive. There are some challenges. There's no question about it. And I think the Medicaid expansion is a great, great thing. It's really important not only to the people who are getting coverage, and we know there are that many people and more who are eligible, mm-hmm. and healthcare can mean a great deal to them. But it's also important for the rest of us because as they have coverage, the amounts of uncompensated care go down, and that's a bill that is basically paid for by everybody else. So it's good for them, and I think it's good for the healthcare system.
So the sort of 4-to-1 ratio is not a problem. So many more on government insurance than private insurance.
I don't think of it in terms of a ratio. I mean, I think it's no secret that the website of the exchange hasn't worked like we wanted, and we're making a big change there, and we hope to get as many people covered both through Medicaid and through private insurance. So, I mean, our goals are going to be to continue to increase the numbers of people covered, but I'm not particularly focused on a ratio.
Well, let me pick up on that point that's not a secret, the troubled rollout. What did you learn from this enrollment period that you'll take with you to the next one that begins in 6 months, the next open enrollment period?
Well, I certainly learned that the strategy we had picked for IT development for the website was not the right one. We had picked a strategy of relying on products that were already off the shelf, ready just to be plugged in, and it turned out they weren't ready to be plugged in, and we all suffered the consequences from that. But nonetheless, through some tremendous amount of work with collaboration with our carriers and so many consumer assistance workers, we were able to exceed the overall enrollment goals that we had. What we're going to do differently is change out the IT portion of the website, upgrade it using Connecticut's technology, which has proven to work. So, you know, I think we realized we actually picked the idea of buying software that had already been developed because we thought it would be lower risk. It turned out to be much higher risk, and we're certainly correcting that now.
Peter Bielenson, as CEO of an insurance company on the exchange, how do you think the troubled rollout affects the number of people who signed up?
Well, I think, it obviously was a problem, but Josh has been very open to our suggestions, and I'm really looking forward to going forward with Connecticut. We've been very successful at sort of making lemonade out of lemons in terms of selling now to small groups almost exclusively. And that's quintupled our enrollment in the last month or so. So we're doing much, much better.
Let me interrupt and ask what the numbers are. How many people enrolled with your company, Evergreen Health Co-op?
We have decided to take the tack of the other carriers and not disclose that. We've been extremely open, but we've quintupled since we were talking about a month or so ago. And part of the reason we're not giving the actual numbers is because a lot of our small groups hit our administrator at different times, and so we don't know exactly who is finally sent us checks or not. So we don't want to disclose our exact numbers, but I can say we've taken a dramatic move upwards, and we're looking forward also to be able to sell to the individual market on the upgraded Maryland exchange when Connecticut comes on board in November.
And let me ask you the parallel question that I asked Secretary Sharfstein. What lessons do you think the state needs to take to the next open enrollment period?
Well, I think Josh will take the steps that are necessary. A couple things are obviously important, and one is having a tremendous IT oversight of the whole process, A, and B, making sure that we test before it goes live. That's a clear thing that we learned both from the previous exchange and also our own efforts here at Evergreen to before we went live. And so testing is absolutely crucial before it goes live in November.
Colleen Berry, you have looked at the media representation of the Affordable Care Act, how it's change depending on where you live.
Yeah.
Tell us what you found.
So we have a study underway partnering with the Wesleyan Media Project, and the goal of that study is to try to look at the 210 media markets around the country and understand what information the public is getting based on their geographic location with regard to the Affordable Care Act. So we're looking at local news media coverage, and then we're looking at two types of advertising, the political advertisements, which, as you can probably sense, are more negative, and the advertising by the plans, which is trying to sell a product. So that's product-related. And there is an enormous amount of variation in all three of these types of media communication to the public. And so I think where you live really matters in terms of what you're seeing. The American public, from survey research from the Kaiser Family Foundation, suggests that exposure to news media is a primary source among the public for getting this information. So where you live matters.
Dr. Sharfstein, do you think the media portrayal affected how many people enrolled in Maryland?
It's hard for me to say. I think I'd probably defer to Professor Berry and others who are experts in that. I'll tell you one thing, though. I think I've been very interested in how the media has undercovered the Medicaid expansion. Yeah. Like, I don't mean to, you know, turn the question back to you, but you asked me about the ratio of Medicaid enrollees to private sector enrollees. And at different times, stories have just not even mentioned the Medicaid enrollees. And I don't know why that's the case. It's certainly something that struck me. I'm a pediatrician. I've taken care of Medicaid patients. I know how important Medicaid is. I run the Medicaid program. So, you know, it's just been very interesting for me to watch, understanding, of course, that, you know, the website had a lot of problems and we're making a big change. But why so many media mentions of the Affordable Care Act really wouldn't, and this isn't just it's a Maryland thing, but I think it's also a national thing also. A lot of focus on the 7 million, not a lot of focus on the other millions and millions of people who are getting coverage through Medicaid.
On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Kass speaking with Maryland Health Secretary Joshua Sharfstein, with Colleen Berry, an associate professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, and with us by phone, Peter Bielenson. He's CEO of Evergreen Health Co-op, one of the insurers on the state's exchange. Colleen Berry, we can measure how many people have gotten insurance through the Affordable Care Act. What are the other measures we can look at to see if it's working?
So it's important to remember that I think of three cornerstones of health reform. One is ensuring people access. A second is changing the way health insurance markets are working. So, for example, eliminating the pre-existing condition exclusion. And third, changing in a fundamental way the healthcare delivery system and payment system. And I think along all three of those metrics, we need to understand how the law is working. So, for example, with the last, are we really changing the way we're providing care for individuals to increase the quality of care that people are getting?
And do we? It's too early for an answer.
So it is too early for an answer, but it's not the situation that we won't know for years and years. People are already conducting studies to understand, for example, what the effect of accountable care is. We have accountable care organizations that are springing up all over the country, including here in the state, and we have medical home models that are being tried as innovations. And we can, in a relatively short period of time, try to study what the effects of those new models of care are.
And, you know, I'd point out that the hospital model that Maryland has, where we've been talking here on your program about the approach that Maryland is no longer going to pay hospitals on a fee-for-service basis, all that was provided under authority granted by the Affordable Care Act. And that's a model that has some very aggressive quality targets as well.
patient-centered medical homes and the accountable care organizations you talked about are both ways of trying to focus on outcomes more than on the services provided. Let me leap into a general question, and Peter, feel free to jump in also. And that is, even if the Affordable Care Act works well to improve access to medical care, is that enough? I mean, you're probably familiar with Tony Eitan of the California Endowment, who was born in Baltimore and got his medical degree at Johns Hopkins and has spoken here a couple times in the last year. And he says that the stress in poor communities, of the stress of poverty, of crime, vacant buildings, not having good sources of healthy food, not having a safe place to walk. He said at a symposium at Johns Hopkins Urban Health Institute last year that that kind of stress really burrows into people.
We started to say to people, give me your address, I'll tell you how long you're going to live. And I can do it. I mean, it's not because I'm brilliant. It's because of the way we pattern opportunity in the society. Your address says way more about you than you know. Some census tracts in Baltimore, in this city, where life expectancy is in the 50s. At this point, we still try to explain this disparity by saying it's a product of a lack of access to health care and poor health behaviors. And I say to you that that is a lack of critical thinking. We're smarter than this. We know more than this. We have to stop coming up with these lame explanations for a phenomenon that is so profound and embedded in the very structure of our society.
So he's basically saying we can really improve the medical model. We can improve access to medical care and still have very disparate health outcomes because we're not addressing communities. So all this effort that's going into the Affordable Care Act, is it the best way to make our communities healthy?
Well, let me take the first shot at that. When I was the health commissioner in Baltimore City, we did that study that he's talking about the difference in life expectancy across different communities. And of course, it has to do with the many different types of issues, not just medical issues. I certainly would say that's what we said when we put that study out to begin with. I think that there are lots of ways to get at health. The healthcare system happens to be one of those ways. It certainly doesn't answer everything, but I think we have to ask the question, do we have a healthcare system that's aligned towards health? That's a reasonable question for public health to be asking, and the answer really is we really haven't. We have a healthcare system that generally is very tilted towards paying for very expensive care for people once they get sick. And having a healthcare system that tilts towards health looks different and really does matter for people. And I certainly would, I don't know exactly where that particular speaker was heading, but if you're saying don't look to the healthcare system for progress, I think that's a big mistake because it matters. Primary care matters, community health matters, outreach in communities matters, vaccination matters. And in fact, by changing the financial incentives in Maryland, we're pushing a lot of effort and interest in keeping people healthier as a way to save costs in the healthcare system. And that really matters. Of course, it's not like a magic wand across all society's problems, but I certainly think the healthcare system matters.
Peter, Sheila, you sound like you're trying to jump in.
Yeah. When I was health commissioner in Baltimore, we dealt with this a lot, and what we sort of call it is the four-legged stool of a healthy community. And as Josh was saying, obviously access to healthcare, preventive primary care, the kind of services that make that help keep people healthy, including healthy food availability in the food deserts, is absolutely crucial. But I think what Tony Eitan was also talking about was safe and affordable housing as the second leg of the stool, access to good public education, and most importantly, livable wage jobs in communities. You really need all four of those things to do for a healthy community. And that's not to say that proceeding along with the Affordable Care Act is not the right thing to do, but we have to address all four of those areas to be comprehensive about it.
In terms of the impact on the health of Marylanders, how does the Affordable Care Act compare, say, to the state's Medicare waiver, the all-payer system in which the state sets hospital rates in Maryland? I mean, that goes back to the 70s. Is the Affordable Care Act like the biggest milestone ever, or how does it compare?
Well, like I said, it's the Affordable Care Act that allows us to take that existing waiver and turn it a little bit so that the impact on health can be greater. And so, you know, I think that specifically, instead of just paying hospitals for the services they provide, hospitals will get paid more as their community gets healthier. And that's a major shift for healthcare in Maryland. It's one reason why we're getting so much national attention for that. It's made possible by the Affordable Care Act. And at the same time, because more people are covered, they're then able to take advantage of healthcare services and be in a position to be healthier. So, you know, I think it potentially is a very, very important step forward for the state. And there's so many different pieces to the puzzle that are coming in, you know, and I'm looking forward to all the pieces being there.
Clearly, just providing an insurance card isn't enough to guaranteeing that people have security and stability both in their health care and in their lives. And a good example, I think, is an area where I do a lot of research, which is in the context of individuals with mental illness, with substance abuse conditions. Having health insecurity can be damaging with regard to your whole health and your mental health. And so part of having that insurance card is providing stability to people. But then we need to go even farther and try to do a better job providing care in the type of care that people need. It is the case that often people have multiple chronic health conditions. In addition to that, they're struggling with mental health or substance abuse issues. And so part of what the Affordable Care Act allows is more coordinating care, paying providers in different ways so that an individual can have a single source to get a variety of different services they need to live in a healthy way, regardless of what their conditions are.
And on that point, you know, one of the smaller programs we've launched because of the Affordable Care Act is a special kind of chronic health home model within mental health and substance abuse clinics, where thousands of patients now who would be really pinballs in the medical system going for different types of procedures or care now get case managers, and they can get medical care within their drug treatment or mental health program. And we'll be watching the outcomes of that. If it weren't for all this other stuff going on, that would be a huge change. But it's almost buried by everything else. There's so many different things that are moving forward at the same time now.
One thing I always tell my students is to look at things over a longer term time trajectory. And right now, we're focused on this very narrow period of enrollment. And for good reason, there's been a lot of upheaval for people. People have struggled to get what they need. But the truth is, in a year and in 5 years, we may look at this period very differently than we do today in terms of our experience and the experience of citizens in Maryland of being able to get care differently, getting services that they weren't able to get before, to have the peace of mind associated with having insurance when in the past they haven't had insurance and have felt that fear of getting in some sort of accident or having some sort of medical emergency and not being able to have good access to care.
Well, what is the right time frame to try to form some judgments about whether it's working? Peter, I'll throw that to you.
Yeah, I would venture to guess it would be 2 to 3 years. I think we'll start seeing things in the first 6 months to 12 months, but after 2 to 3 years, I tend to agree with Colleen that this rocky rollout will be a thing of the past and that there'll be a lot of beneficiaries from a variety of parts of Obamacare. And I think in 10 to 15 years, it'll go down as his greatest legacy.
What kind of time frame are you looking at to judge it, Dr. Sharfstein?
I think when we started, we were looking at around 2020. So maybe a couple of years longer than what these guys have suggested. I think that there are certainly some changes going on in the insurance markets that may take a little bit of time to, you know, kind of smooth out. You've got the changes going on in clinical care that I think will probably be more like 4 or 5 years than 2 to 3. So I think across everything, I'd probably be a slightly longer time frame, but I wouldn't say, you know, we're going to have to wait a decade.
But in terms of individuals having experience with the law, I think that we're going to see that over the next year or so. So it's not just a program. It's actually something that's touching people's lives, and they're beginning to inform impressions themselves and for their family members about how they're experiencing it.
Well, thank you all.
I agree.
Thank you all for sharing your perspective. Thanks.
Thank you.
Dr. Joshua Sharfstein is Maryland's health secretary. Peter Bielenson is CEO of Evergreen Health Co-op, one of the insurers on the state's exchange. And Colleen Berry is associate professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. This is the last episode of our series, The Checkup, How Healthcare is Changing in Maryland. But we'll continue to follow the changes we've highlighted for the last 7 months here on Maryland Morning. If you want to hear past episodes of The Checkup, visit our series website, wipr.org/thecheckup. I'm Sheila Cast, ahead on Maryland Morning. What's religion's role in local government? Stay with us on 88.1.